This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Last November, Northern Kentucky University announced that Ashish Vaidya would assume the role as president of the 50-year-old institution. He started last month. The economist, an economist by training, President Vaidya comes immediately from St. Cloud University in Minnesota, where he was first the provost and vice president for academic affairs, and most recently the interim president. He has also taught and served as an administrator at California State University, Los Angeles, and at Cal State Channel Islands. We are joined today by the new president of Northern Kentucky University, Ashish Vaidya. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call 513-419-7100, or you can email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome. Welcome not only to Cincinnati Edition, but welcome to Cincinnati and, well, greater Cincinnati and maybe in this particular case, Northern Kentucky.
Thank you, Dan. Happy to be here.
Having grown up in Northern Kentucky, I feel a lot of identity there. How would you describe your personal style? Is it relating to students, relating to faculty? One of the things I discovered as I was looking around, you've got a Twitter account, Prez Vaidya.
I do.
And we had a former president of the University of Cincinnati, Santa Ono, Prez Ono, who just made that part of his total personality. So how would you describe your style of relating?
Well, I think I would say that it's a style that focuses on engagement. You know, I want to engage students. I want to engage the campus. I want to engage the community so that we can all sort of learn more about each other, understand the needs of what we're trying to do, better help serve our purpose, our mission. And so the Twitter account is another form of engagement. I started that a couple of years ago when I assumed the interim presidency at St. Cloud State. It was my way to do several things. One is to connect with the Twitter audience, which is slightly different from the audience that you and I grew up with, perhaps.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it was a way to showcase what was going on the campus, as so the folks know exactly what's happening, and for me to share my excitement about things that were going on, what our students were doing, what our faculty and staff, what was happening in the community. So it's been a wonderful way for me to stay connected and share some of the good things. So I might tweet about this as well later on today.
Have you, absolutely, and tell people it will be online and they can listen to this. But also, have you had a chance in this past month, and I know you've only been here a month, to begin to get out into the community?
Oh, yes, indeed. The transition team, the folks at NKU have done a really great job of making sure that I'm both spending as much time in the community and meeting with several folks, our business leaders, our community leaders, our civic leaders. This is a very special region, and they want to make sure that that I get ahead of in front of all these people as quickly as possible. And something I'll continue to do throughout my time here, which is to really learn more about what's going on and how NKU can continue to serve this region as an engine of growth here.
In your remarks back in November when you were introduced as the new president, you made the point about the importance of metro regions. NKU, this is a region that is in actually three states with a river, which if you haven't already discovered it, can be very wide at times. When you think of this region, what do you think of it? Do you think of it as Northern Kentucky? Do you think of it as Metro Cincinnati? How do you think of the region?
I'm glad you asked that question. And I think the way I'm beginning to understand this region from what I'm listening and hearing is that the river, geographical divides are in people's minds. It's up to us to determine and take ownership of what our community is. Where do we draw the lines is really entirely up to us. We're not going to be bound by what politicians tell us or what society tells us or whatever. We have to take ownership of that. And what I've heard from folks both on the Northern Kentucky side as well as on the other side of the river has been that this region means a great deal to them, that they take ownership of students and people wherever they are located because of the proximity of what happens. These kinds of relationships are formed not by hard and fast rules in the sand, but really about the relationships that you build. And so I'm gratified to know that. And so my role, I think, will be to learn and appreciate the fact that we have a thriving entrepreneurial region that is very committed to its prosperity and takes ownership of that and so I think that's a great situation for me to be in.
You moved to the United States in 1985, as I understand your bio, and you moved from India. You already had an undergraduate degree and a master's degree, but you moved here to pursue your PhD in economics. But how would you say that your experience of growing up in India shapes who you are today? And how is that a continuing influence?
So I grew up in different parts of India. As my wife will joke about it, I have no roots, she claims, because my father was in the government service. So I was born in New Delhi, and every 3 or 4 years we would move depending on his assignment, mainly in the urban areas. I mean, we went from New Delhi to Bombay to Calcutta to Bangalore and so on. And I think, and eventually in boarding school, because it was getting disruptive for my schooling and education, I think what I really absorbed over those years was an appreciation for multiculturalism, for diversity, for being able to adapt and appreciate different ways of thinking, certainly different foods and different cultures. As you know, the north of India is very different from the south and the east and the west. And it became part of my DNA. I think I felt a sense of connectedness wherever I went because there were some common themes and some very different themes. And I took that with me when I came to the United States. And when I came here, you know, to California was my first stop, as you know. And California was very much like that, just very diverse, even back in the 80s. Lots of different groups, lots of different ethnicities, but also lots of different socioeconomic classes that presented challenges in its own way. So I think I learned to appreciate difference and how bringing people together was an important aspect of our work. Unknowingly, perhaps in those early years, because you weren't quite focused on that, but you just went along with the flow. And I grew to appreciate that more as I've spent my last, 33 years now here.
Mm-hmm. Why economics, sometimes referred to as the dismal science? You seem to smile a lot, so you don't seem to fall into that category. Why economics?
Well, I started off, back when I was growing up in India, there were really only two options that were considered respectable. You either became an engineer or you became a doctor. Anything else was considered, obviously, you're not quite good enough or something, you know. My father was an engineer, and so everyone assumed, well, that's the direction, you know, he would go. I began sort of exploring and learning and reading and interacting with various people. And I really was struck by the stark contrast that India presented itself. Wealth on the one hand, opportunity on the one hand, and then poverty on the other. It didn't take long to venture out from where we were living to really see those contrasts. And it certainly had an impact on me. And I took some trips out to better understand what that meant. Why was this the case? How was it that some people had a comfortable living environment and lifestyle and we had such abject poverty on the other hand. At the root cause was the fact that there was a great deal of economic inequality. To better understand that, I felt I had to learn and study more about economics and get more into that. And that sort of led me down that path. My parents were very supportive and progressive. They were not concerned at all. They knew it was something I was passionate about, and they supported me along the way, well into the fact when I applied for my doctoral program.
They didn't think you were a failure because you weren't a doctor or an engineer.
No, I became a different kind of doctor, not the kind that usually people call to for help in the middle of the night. But still, they were proud that I'd chosen a path that was meaningful to me.
We have a caller on the line who has called in, has a question for you. Chris, what would you like to ask Dr. Vaidya?
Sure. Hi, Dr. Vaidya. Welcome to Northern Kentucky and Go North. I'm a faculty member at Gateway Community and Technical College, and we're all very excited to hear about the relationship that you would build with Gateway Community and Technical College.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that, Chris. And absolutely, go Norse. I love that. You know, I've come from two different university systems, one in California, one in Minnesota, where transfer was a very high priority. And working closely with our community college partners is critical. So I've already, in fact, had a chance to meet with your president, Fernando Figueroa. We've had lunch already, and we've talked a great deal about what we could do to enhance that relationship between the two institutions. In my mind, Chris, these two institutions will continue to work together to really enhance and deepen the educational attainment of this region. As I'm a big believer in how public education transforms lives, transforms regions, and makes it more affordable for so many students to achieve a certificate, an associate's degree, a baccalaureate degree, or even beyond that. And so to me, that's a very important aspect of our work. And I know we've done some really good work already. So I hope to build on that going forward.
Am I correct to say that in California, there is much more development of the community college system and the integration with the other colleges than there is maybe of what we've got here locally? Or am I wrong on that?
Well, I want to find out more about what we have here, what's working well, and what we could do to improve in terms of that relationship between the institutions. I would say actually in California, it's improved over time. It wasn't really very good to begin with. And I'll give you an example. It's not specific to California, but it's specific to the national landscape. Over 88% of students who begin at a community college essentially want to get a baccalaureate. Mm. Well, the reality is if it is only about 30-odd percent actually move on to a four-year institution, and only half of those actually end up with a baccalaureate degree. So we're clearly not doing something right for many of those students. And that was a challenge in California as well. Transfer was a major component of our admissions process. People would be able to begin at a two-year institution and transfer over. But for some reason, we were not making it easy for that to happen for a variety of reasons. I think both the system in California and elsewhere have taken that to heart now and are making some major improvements in helping those students along.
You know, one of the things that is happening right now in the higher education field is there are people who are sort of raising a couple of points, and I want to get at those. One is that questioning whether higher education is worth the cost, that students come out burdened by too much debt, and therefore have a hard time getting their lives started, and then have to go to graduate school to make certain other things happen, and that this is just not financially a smart move. Obviously, you've got a particular point of view on this, both as a college president but also as an economist. What's your answer to that?
You know, Dan, I'm really glad you brought up that question. I think it's a very important issue that we have to really address in multiple fronts. First and foremost, I think the narrative about public higher education has been sort of lost in translation to some extent. We have become, sort of accustomed to focusing so much on the day-to-day that we don't take a step back to really understand the transformative power of what we do. Having said that, I think there is lots of room for improvement across the spectrum, and I'm talking more in general terms now, with respect to getting better student success outcomes from public higher education in particular. I've always believed that this country, it's probably its most significant aspect is the ability of its public institutions to live up to the hopes and aspirations of its people in terms of opportunity and intergenerational mobility. That what public institutions do at its best is take someone from any background, any situation, any socioeconomic strata, and change the trajectory of their lives. And they become, successful, leading both meaningful lives and careers, and moving up the socioeconomic ladder itself. That is getting somewhat lost in some of the work that we have done. And we have to go back and resurrect that aspect of it. I do believe that state colleges and universities are the engines of economic, social, cultural, and civic mobility. And they are an asset for communities and regions to thrive and prosper. And they must be thought of in those ways. And we must be held accountable to those responsibilities. So we have a improvement to do on our end that has to be met. On the student debt issue, our failure has been in not making sure more and more of our students are retained and complete and leave with highly valued degrees, certificates, and credentials. You mentioned the College of Informatics just a few minutes ago. That was a game changer for NKU and for this region 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
To think about a college that would produce interdisciplinary degrees and students with those skills and competencies that would bring a lot of value to this region. But if you don't finish and you accumulate credit and you spend money and you have nothing to show for it, that's where the failure happens. And that's something we must take responsibility for and ensure that more and more of our students are retained successfully, as we're also paying attention to closing the achievement gap, making sure all our students, especially those typically underrepresented in higher education, are able to succeed and move on to completion and moving on in that economic ladder itself. So I think that, to me, is how we have to reclaim that narrative about being engines of growth and development.
Related to that, not just immediately, but somewhat related to that, is a discussion that I see popping up in the political sphere of questioning whether degrees in arts and sciences – I'm a historian by training, you're an economist – versus more career, direct career orientation makes sense, and that whether or not state universities, colleges and universities ought to be doing as much of or any of the arts and sciences. What's your view on that?
You know, the way to think about this is that you need our citizens and our graduates need to be prepared for a 21st century world that is going to be uncertain, ambiguous, volatile, and we have to really make sure that they have transferable skills no matter what. You can earn a degree in computer science, but 5 years down the road, there could be all kinds of new things that are happening. And so the ability to be lifelong learners is a critical component of it. When I speak to business and industry leaders and I ask them, what is it that you look for? They don't give me specific answers with respect to skills in disciplines. They give me things like, we want the folks who come to work with us to have great communication skills, critical thinking, ability to work in teams, an appreciation for diversity. That's what we need. We want people with global awareness. This is what I'm hearing from the business and industry community. So how do we make sure we integrate that in every academic program we offer so that our students, whether they come out of history, computer science, journalism, theater, it doesn't matter. We have outstanding programs, but every one of them should have both the notion of embarking on a successful career, but also understanding the larger context of the society in which they live in which they'll be productive citizens.
Are universities, have they become too liberal? Are they too politically correct, too unfriendly to students and faculty with conservative perspectives on life? What do you think?
I hope not. We were just discussing that this morning. My hope is that, the best ideas, the free thinking of ideas, that's what we do best. Diversity has many implications, including of thought and perspectives. If we don't allow universities to encourage and create an environment in which difficult conversations, difficult dialogues are not respectfully and in a way that enhances the thinking, then I think we're not doing our job. So that's what I would say. Exposure to all kinds of points of view. I grew up, as you know, Dan, in India, where we had 18 different newspapers running the spectrum from extreme left to extreme right. You learned a great deal about understanding the nuances of what these things are all about and to really enhance our critical thinking skills as well. So I would hope it wouldn't be phrased in the context of that, but I think what universities do at their best is to promote an environment in which great learning happens and that we're not afraid to challenge and think through the thought process to really reach better outcomes for the better society. And a more just society as well. That should be the goal to really have those discussions. And so I hope we continue that tradition.
Back in November, when you were introduced, you mentioned that one of the ways that you had first heard about Northern Kentucky University. It was back in a report that was done in 2002 where President Votruba, James Votruba, had chaired a committee that had put this report out. It was called Stepping Forward as Stewards of Place, a Guide to Leading Public Engagement. And, you know, certainly Dr. Votruba was somebody who was totally engaged in this community and really set an example. And the challenge of that report was, how do you get college president, university presidents, not only to talk the talk, but to walk the walk? So what are you going to have to do in order to walk the walk in terms of public engagement?
I think walking the talk is the way, the best way to do it is to not only listen and learn from what the region is asking for and responding to, but to engage them in meaningful ways in actually coming up with the deliverables that they want. NKU has got a great history of doing that. You mentioned the College of Informatics, Health Innovation Center, the partnership with St. Elizabeth. There are so many examples. I could go on and on.
Your business school, too.
A business school, absolutely. Very, very much so. But what I'm finding is it's actually even beyond those programs. So many of our academic programs have great partnerships with the business industry, with nonprofits, and so on, that is adding value both in the classroom for our students as well as outside opportunities for them as well. So I think in my way, the way we would do it is to make sure we are listening, we are collaborating, we're partnering, we're co-creating in some cases, we're co-delivering in some ways, the kinds of things that we need in order for this region to thrive. So whether it's having fifth grade summer camps on campus, because that's how you instill the wonders of sports or education and in those kinds of things, or whether we bring in outside speakers or we host a conference or we do something with health innovation that is clearly something that we have to focus on. It's going to be that synergistic notion. What Jim Votruba did, I think, is really placed NKU on the national map for an institution that knows how to do public engagement and can actually demonstrate that value. So I just hope that I can continue that trajectory that has been built over the last so many decades.
You've been here a month, so this may be an unfair question, but what's your evaluation of how the College of Informatics has delivered on the promises? The day that the shovels were going to be turned, I happened to be there, and you know there was somebody from, I don't know if it was from HP or one of the big corporations, said there was no more important place to be that day than at NKU and because of what was happening. What do you think about how the College of Informatics has delivered?
You know, let me phrase that, Dan, by saying it's actually only 50 years ago that those shovels were being put into the broader context of a brand new university itself. It's not that long ago. And as you look back, as I reflect a little bit, it's only been a month, but I've had some time to think through this. You know, 50 years ago, there was a vision on those for those founders. This was farmland that was, you know, nothing at all where the campus is today. I hear quite often from alumni who were here about 10, 20 years ago, they've been amazed at the growth, whether it's the College of Informatics, whether it's the other programs we're doing, certainly in the new Health Innovation Center. There's constant change and growth that's occurring, which is both exciting at the same time, I think, is very meaningful. So I would say this is a great question to ask the community. And what I'm hearing is really in that format. You know, what I'm hearing in this 1 month I'm here is extremely gratifying. What I'm hearing is NKU is an asset. We're so delighted that NKU is here. What else could we be doing to make sure NKU continues to grow and prosper? That's music to a new president's ear, let me tell you that. So the ultimate responsibility is not what I think or what I say, but what I hear from the community members. And I've heard so many good things, not only about the College of Informatics, but about so many of our programs that we're delivering every day, and we're delivering on the promise that this region asked for.
We're basically out of time, but one last question looks forward, and that is strategic planning. You come in at a time when you're going to be able to put a stamp on the next strategic plan. What are you looking forward to? What do you see happening in that realm?
I'm really excited about that. It was one of the other driving forces behind why this was such an exciting opportunity for me as well. 2018 onwards, a new plan, a new direction. everyone asks me, what's your vision for NKU? And I'm quick to point out, it's not my vision, it's our collective vision for this place. We will launch that effort this fall, beginning in a couple of weeks when I address the campus in my fall convocation. We're going to talk about what kind of process we should use. What I can share with you, Dan, is that it's not going to be a long, drawn-out process. I don't think we have the patience for that. I don't think we have the time for that sort of activity. But it's going to be a very focused, action-oriented approach to what are the priorities for this institution. I'm a big believer in not trying to do too many things and then failing short on many of them. Let's focus on a few things and do them really well. And let's align them with the elements of both student success, regional stewardship, and financial sustainability. All those three things are key elements of our future. So what could we be doing together to make those things happen? So I'm excited to start that journey.
Well, I want to thank you for being here today and wish you well and hope that we have a lot of opportunities to interact in the future. It's been a very enjoyable time interviewing you and talking with you. So thank you and welcome.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.